Today on Seculo, the border was cleaned up ahead of Joe Biden's visit. We'll talk about that more today on Seculo.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. So President Biden makes the trip, the first, we believe, since even when he was vice president under President Obama, that he had not yet made that trip. So the first time since then, maybe sometime as senator, though we're not sure, it was a different border situation at that point. So he makes the trip. He goes to El Paso. We've got images. I want to start putting those up on the screen right now of what El Paso looked like on the day before his arrival. There's all the people in the streets. And then the day before his arrival. So 2 days before his arrival and then the day before. So they cleaned up the streets so it didn't look like the chaos that it actually looks like every day. We can continue on with these photos as we're talking here. I mean, you look at that center. Look at all of those people. And now look, it looks like the U.S. has, you know, full control in that photo. This, again, is one of the issues people have, is that he did not actually see the border as it is, but instead, as Governor Greg Abbott of Texas said, went down for a photo op, but not a photo op to show how bad things are at the border, a photo op that made it look like things are stable. Now, he has issued policies, and Greg Abbott has also, he delivered a letter to President Biden. He said, this is what you've got to do to really secure the border and help us here in Texas.
Yeah, it's interesting because he said, here's the five things. We have a copy of that. We'll put it up on the screen. There it is for those that are watching it. Number one, he said, you must comply with the many statutes mandating the various categories of aliens shall be detained. This is, again, the unlawful entrants that are in the United States, their ability to be detained under existing statutes, and end the practice of unlawfully paroling aliens en masse. He uses the phrase aliens, which is the legal term. I use the front unlawful entrance. That's the term I use. You must stop sandbagging the implementation of the Remain in Mexico policy, which now it looks like they're, at least according to his plan, they're going to be reinstituting that, and Title 42 expulsions, and fully enforce those measures as federal courts have ordered you to do. Now, what's interesting on Title 42, there, which is a temporary measure, and that is currently before the Supreme Court of the United States, on the question of whether the states could intervene in this. And I think the answer is going to be the states probably can, although I think it's going to be a very close case. I mean, I think 5-4. We'll be filing a brief on that, just that issue of standing to intervene in the proceeding. But if the president puts forward these plans that he's talking about, the need for Title 42 is going to dissipate significantly, because under Title 8, with enforcement mechanisms, you could do the same thing, which is expulsion. In other words, if you come here lawfully, you're not an unlawful entrant. You're not an illegal immigrant, as some use that phrase. You're going through the legal immigration process. But if you're here unlawfully, if you're an unlawful entrant, well, then you get removed, which is the way it should be. And then Greg Abbott also said you must resume the construction of the border wall. And I noticed in some of the pictures that they had in some of the video coming out of El Paso, they had them next to the wall, the border wall, which looked clean and protective. But, of course, there it is. I mean, look at that.
The border wall he opposed.
He opposes that, but that's what's working.
That's what's working. Greg Abbott says that's what needs to be finished. And the billions of dollars to finish it have already been appropriated.
Right.
That money is already available to the federal government. It's just the executive branch has not authorized the use of those funds to be used to finish the wall. And again, Texas is one of the biggest problems. I mean, there's Arizona, but Texas,
they have the biggest border, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's got the most areas that are vulnerable to the cartels, to the traffickers, to these massive amounts of migrants. So the first question is, was all of this just a photo op and a talking point because he's about to announce his presidential campaign in a month?
Yeah, and we're getting so much flack on the border. That's, I think, part of it.
And we're going to have to track very closely, does he ever go in to implement these policies? Because the left is threatening lawsuits, and they're threatening, again, to, you know, even put up more liberal candidates if he takes these immigration
moves. So what's interesting here to me is if the left files lawsuits against President Biden's immigration plans, we would be filing a lawsuit supporting the administration saying, if those plans are lawful, that they're lawful. If they are, and I'm assuming they will be.
And if they're being implemented.
And if they're being implemented. It's very interesting dynamic. We'll take your calls, 800-684-3110.
our new world, with the way you can capture media so quickly, whether it's on your phone or any other device you've got, is that you can't really get away with these cleanups scams where you got a president who's going to finally go to the border. Oh, let's clean up all the streets. Let's disappear all the migrants. Let's put them in a camp, you know, miles away. Let's take them to the Bridge of Americas, which is, by the way, a commercial bridge.
That's the crossing point for the trucks that are doing business between Mexico.
Sometimes those are being used for bad things.
Yeah, but most of the time it's the legal point
that's not the
entry
thousands of
for
people.
Goods and services between Mexico and the United States.
Right, that's not the thousands of
it's
people.
Trade.
That's not the people coming across in the groups. And it's not, again, thousands of people sleeping on the street. He went to go see migrant centers that were empty. And they were empty because they were emptied out. I mean, so, again, you can't pull these stunts anymore on people.
Because people have them on their phones.
Take a listen to Greg Abbott. This is the governor of Texas. Now, yes, he's a Republican. He's been critical of Joe Biden. But he is the governor. He's been asking him to come there. Just talk about how little notice they had to ask Greg Abbott to show up. Take a listen.
During this entire time, Joe Biden has not called me. He did not call me, nor his staff called and let us know either about his visit or to invite us until last night. We got a random email to one of my staff members asking if I would be there to meet him on the tarmac. And so they have failed to communicate. And listen, this visit is about 2 years too late and about $20 billion short of what needs to be done. All he's going to do down there is rearrange the chairs on the deck of the Titanic. He's not going to achieve any solutions that will make the border safer, more secure, and stop illegal immigration.
It was interesting because Governor Abbott has said in a letter to President Biden that he hand-delivered on the tarmac.
Yeah,
that's what he was talking about. He said, you must comply with the statutes mandating various categories of individuals should be detained and end the practice of this en masse parole, which they've been doing. You must stop sandbagging the implementation of Remain in Mexico, which was very effective under the previous administration. Also utilize Title 42. You must aggressively prosecute illegal entrance. And that's it. I am using the term unlawful entrance. That's what they are. They're people that have unlawfully entered. And also immediately resume construction of the border, which was so ironic that that's where he's getting his picture taken, next to the border wall. So you have all of that. And then the question you ask yourself is, the administration says they're going to do all these enforcement measures, which the left is now threatening to sue if they do it. And we said if those measures by President Biden are legitimate, if they're being enforced, if they are protecting our border and they need to be defended, we'll jump in and defend it as well.
Yeah,
if they're being enforced.
The fifth point that Governor Abbott made, which I thought was interesting, and we've seen a lot of people call for, is to designate these drug cartels as foreign terrorist organizations. Yes. And if you see the response by the Sinaloa cartel to the arrest of El Chapo Jr., and you know he was once arrested and they had to release him because of the violence, they are aiming at civilian aircraft. I mean, they've got helicopters
and they have the capability to do it.
They're now blowing up the city as we speak. Mm. I mean, so I don't know how many people have been killed. We know 29 were killed just in the attempt to capture him. That's war. That's not capturing like a mob boss. That's like capturing Osama bin Laden. I mean, kind of like level. More casualties in capturing El Chapo's son than that.
Yeah.
So these organizations are killing Americans. They are terrorizing Mexican cities and towns. And so why don't we designate them as foreign terrorist organizations so that we can utilize more effective law enforcement and military against them?
And it's interesting because with the new Congress coming in, one of the first things they're going to do, we're going to talk about this tomorrow, is stop the funding of the 87,000 IRS agents that was going ahead in these appropriations bill. And they could stop it because the money hasn't been appropriated. Wouldn't it be great to take some of that money and say, you know what we will do, though? We'll redeploy for law enforcement on the border where we need it, actually, which will protect all Americans. We're taking your calls, 800-684-3110. Let's go ahead and take a call.
Yeah, Tim's calling in from California on line one. Hey, Tim.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
How do we get the Biden administration to see the way the border really is instead of doing the cleanup job as they've done?
They know what it really is. They see the images on TV. That's what I'm saying. You can't escape reality. Now, they can clean it up for him so he doesn't have to walk by it in person. But all those images are on television all the time. In fact, all the media is showing the before and after photos of just this visit. He's seen the crisis. I don't even think he'd be willing to go there or talk about implementing plans the ACLU might file lawsuits against if he didn't realize and his team just how bad it
was. Well, Mayorkas said we've got, he finally admitted, do we have that sound? Well, Mayorkas said, I think it was last week. He said, look, it was on one of the, I think it was one of the Sunday shows, one of the news shows, saying basically acknowledging finally, yeah, there's a real problem that the system's overwhelmed. We can't cope with the numbers and it's going to get worse. We haven't. We're looking for it. Okay.
Yeah, we didn't get that. That's the reality. We want to talk to you too. 1-800-684-3110, especially if you're in areas that have been affected. I mean, listen, you could be in a town way outside where the border is, but maybe you've had a busload of migrants or two dropped off.
Now, it's interesting. The governor of Colorado is now not sending the – he was going
to
send
Chicago and New York City.
The people that were sent to him, to his city, he was going to send to New York.
And Chicago.
He canceled that because the mayors of those two cities said, who are Democrats, said, don't do that to us.
Well, they said they can't handle it. Now, that's wild that New York is saying, you know, if they can't handle 15 to 30,000 people in a city that large, that they don't have the resources, but they've got their own crime problems going on right now, drug problems going on. This adds to it. So the answer is that even Democrat to Democrat, it's not working. And what they were saying is a lot of these people are naming those cities as the places to go. And then the New York Mayor Adams came back and said, they may be telling you they got family here, but when they get off the bus and we ask them, where do you want to go? They don't have anywhere to go. They just know those cities in the United States. So they think that's a better place to be to potentially find work or find some kind of safe haven, but that they don't have the contacts. I think we do have the sound from Mayorkas. Yeah, let's take a listen.
Would you, Secretary, qualify what is happening on the border right now as a crisis?
You know, we have seen the situation at the border managed in an orderly way. We have seen it in extraordinarily challenging circumstances as well. You can rest assured, Poppy, that we're doing everything that we possibly can to build a system that provides humanitarian relief in a safe and orderly way while trying to persuade Congress to fix what is a broken system.
In other words, it's a disaster. Now, was he down there with the president?
He was.
Yeah. So, okay. So they are seeing the sanitized version, but as Jordan said, they know exactly what's at stake here. They know exactly what's wrong.
They know the
X amount of hundreds of thousands of illegal entrants, unlawful entrants came into the United States. They know that, for instance, right now in El Paso, they're having a tremendous amount of problem with, getting ready for this, increased crimes on people breaking into cars, primarily the people being apprehended, Venezuelan.
Yeah. And what they're doing is because they got moved. And they have no shelter, so they're looking for the vehicles as a place to shelter.
Yeah, local shelters were unable to accept the individuals. And Customs and Border Patrol said, we have cleaned out these areas this week. They said that.
Oh, yeah, it all happened this week. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. That's 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on Seculo. And to continue to take your phone calls. Whitney called in from Texas Online, too. Hey, Whitney.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm calling from the Dallas area. That means I'm closer to Oklahoma than the southern border, but we are very aware of what's happening. It is a legitimate crisis. We're seeing the crime impacts daily.
Sure.
And my question is, where did the resources come from? I mean, the manpower and the money to do this kind of Herculean cleanup in basically 24 hours is
your tax dollars.
Significant.
You, me, and every other American paid for that one.
Yeah, no, Whitney, you have a great question. We paid for that.
You know, if I was president, President Trump went right. Remember when, like, there during the hurricane hit Houston, he went right to the facilities to see how many people were suffering. You know, he was helping to give out supplies. They didn't try to whitewash that for him. Here, I mean, this was that total whitewashing of a situation, and it was so he could take photos where the streets didn't have human excrement and needles on them. You realize that,
of course. Because they don't want to show what's actually going on down there. But the thing that you said is right. Everybody knows what's going on there. The mayors know. The governor knows.
Republican and Democrat.
Republicans and Democrats are saying this is out of control. Now, if the president puts forward these policies, if he implements these policies he's put forward, the ACLU and these groups have already said we're suing them to stop the enforcement. Now, understand what that means. If we think those policies are legitimate, the way they read, they appear to be, and they're being implemented, and they will protect citizens of the United States, we would file a brief, yes, on behalf of the Biden administration on those issues, if, in fact, they're doing enforcement with laws that make sense.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the ACLU is challenging them. The government has the right to protect its citizens, period.
Yeah. You know, the court has hampered a lot of what states could do.
Yep.
So it's really, I mean, they've said in most recent Supreme Court opinions, this is the federal government. It is up to the feds. They've got to handle this situation on when it comes to specifically to the border, and then how to utilize the immigration courts and systems after people already enter the U.S. So again, that's one of the biggest problems. When people are apprehended by regular law enforcement, they're handed over to federal agents. The federal agents oftentimes are under orders to just release people.
Correct. And that's the catch and release program. That's what that was all about. So we'll see what happens here. But there needs to be something. And we're on ACLJ's on top of it. Our government affairs office is on top of it. Our litigators are already looking at the issue. And again, that's where your support of the ACLJ makes a huge difference, because we can bring you this information and litigate the case at ACLJ.org. Your support makes a huge difference. We encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ. ACLJ.org. And update on Supreme Court case.
Welcome back to Secchio. We will continue to take your calls. Get those coming in, 1-800-684-3110. On the border crisis, I mean, we'll talk a little McCarthy, too, because we were not on the air once that came to a close. We'll do that a little bit later in the broadcast. We take calls on that as well at 1-800-684-3110. But we have an ACLJ victory, and we always want to utilize this broadcast when we can to update you on the work of the ACLJ as well, directly, and when we've got victories to announce, to make sure you know about them.
Yeah, so, you know, we've for 40 years, we've been fighting over the issue of public recognition of prayer, or students wanting to pray, or individuals wanting to pray. We've got a case of the Supreme Court we'll talk about in a moment, but sometimes these are just cases at a local level, but you need to know what's happening, because we talk about, you know, border crisis and going to court on that, or the Supreme Court of the United States and dealing with that on the overturning of Roe, but a lot of these cases are individuals in a small community or a larger community that need help. And we've got a victory report that we put in our email today to put out, because it's going to show you that whether it is at the Supreme Court of the United States or in a local school board, ACLJ lawyers were there, Cece.
Yeah, and here it was just an elementary school in Iowa. There was a little boy in an elementary school in Iowa that had been told that he could not bring his Christian reading material or talk about the Bible due to separation of church and state. And he was told this on multiple occasions. So, of course, we were contacted by his parents, and we immediately jumped in and sent a letter to the school just telling the school of this little boy's rights, that he has the right to have a conversation at school about the Bible, or to bring his Bible, or to even hand out religious material. And so once the school got the information, got the relevant legal information, they changed their policy, and this little boy has been able to bring his Christian material and talk about the Bible because we stepped in and provided the right information.
You know, what's interesting, these cases, we've been litigating these cases, folks, for decades. I mean, literally 4 decades. And the reason I wanted to talk to you about it today was because, you know, while that's going on, let me tell you what else is going on. We're at the Supreme Court of the United States. We represent the city of Ocala on a huge case involving prayer. And the big part of the case is whether somebody that's just offended because someone prays has the right to then go to federal court and seek injunctions to stop the prayer activity, which so far the Court of Appeals and the District Court said they could. So we took the case up to the Supreme Court of the United States, and we briefed it in September and again in November, and the other side responded in October, and then it was Christmas, and then it was set for conference originally on January 6th. So we were supposed to have it last Friday. We got an order about 2 days before that said being reconferenced. Didn't say when, just pulled the file. That it's very hard to read into what that means. We did get word today that at least as of right now, the case is scheduled to be discussed in conference on, there's the docket sheet. We're putting it up right there from the Supreme Court website this Friday. Now, what does that mean? If the court decides they're going to grant it on Friday, they will usually issue the order that afternoon. They meet, the justices meet, all nine of them, at approximately 10 o'clock in the morning. It's usually about a two-hour conference. They go around the table and decide. You've got to have 4 votes for a Supreme Court case to be heard. So it's called the rule of four. So when 4 justices say we want to hear it, then they decide they're going to hear it or not hear it. Now, if they have 4 that say they want to hear it, it gets heard. Now, here's what's interesting on this one. Justices Alito and Gorsuch do not participate in what's called the cert pool. It's a little bit in the weeds, but I think it's important for people to understand this. What that means is the other chambers, including conservatives and liberals, their clerks look at the certiorari petitions, and they decide we recommend this case, we don't recommend this case, here's what the issue is. They do a little memo. Alito and Gorsuch do not do that. So they review them prior to that. Of course, all the justices get the memos before. So my guess is the memos have been circulated. That's like guess number one here. And again, this is a little bit of speculation, but I've been doing this since the 1980s. And then if there's a grant of review, I think we would find out Friday afternoon. Be after Jordan, after we're off the air, but we would know Friday. We would send out an email alert or maybe come on live if we find out. It's also possible that before then they'd pull it off for another conference date. That happens too.
Yeah, I think what's important here is that this is a lot of those cases we've talked about for years of like the angry, upset atheist. Yeah. My stomach hurts when I walk by and see a nativity scene, or
They said they went to get offended. They knew they'd be offended. That's why they went.
Yeah, I get a headache if I see a Christmas display or if there's a Christmas song, and it always happens around this time of year.
Yeah.
These seasons. So we've seen that a lot. We beat it back a lot in court, ultimately, on different issues. Usually the court doesn't address directly the offended observer issue. They find other issues about why these lawsuits are frivolous. Clause.
Right.
Yeah.
But the offended observer has been the avenue that you mentioned, the nativity scenes we just got.
Which is so
Christmas.
Weird in the United States of America that we have an ability is to sue because I'm offended.
Only when it comes to the Establishment Clause. Yeah. That is the only area.
Absolutely. And that's the reason that, like Jordan was saying, walking by a nativity scene and saying, oh, my stomach's hurt. In any other case, you have to actually plead a harm. You have to actually be harmed in some really legitimate way, not just, oh, I was offended. And especially in this case that we have going in Ocala, they specifically went there because they were trying to be offended by this prayer that was happening in a community, which is our nation's history. When bad things happen in a community, leaders get together and pray. That has happened since the founding of our
nation. But these people
nation.
Said, hey, we know we'll get offended if we go to this, but we're going anyways. And that's when they followed.
Every time the Congress adjourned for more votes on the speaker.
Yes.
Prayer.
Prayer with a point.
Sometimes twice a day.
Yeah. And this has been part of our history as a country. But the idea here is understand what they're doing. And this is, if we win this case, or if they take it, first of all, number one, if they take it, here's what happens. We have 30 days to write our main brief, then they have 30 days to write their brief, and then we have about 2 weeks to get the reply, which would put us still in this term. So it would be heard this term. However, and this is the big however here, is if it goes, you know, into February, probably goes to the next term, although the briefing will be this summer. So we could have a very, very busy Supreme Court term spring-wise, this spring, getting this ready. Having said that, Let me say this. I wanted to bring the point of whether it is at the Supreme Court of the United States or whether it is a local school board that ACLJ lawyers were there.
Absolutely. Like we started out talking, we were talking about a little boy in an elementary school in Iowa. That's where we fought for religious liberty, and we won there. Or we can take it to the Supreme Court, and that's how vast our practice and protection of religious liberties and rights are from, again, an elementary school in Iowa to the Supreme Court of the United States.
And then, of course, we're able to broadcast to you each and 5 days a week on this broadcast to get you all this information. And we want to encourage you, this is a good example of the breadth and the scope of the ACLJ. We're talking about a border crisis where the ACLJ is engaged both in our government affairs office, but also in potentially in court if this moves forward.
Sure.
Supreme Court of the United States on prayer, local school district on prayer, all happening simultaneously.
Yeah, that's right. And again, and all week working with our congressional colleagues and allies on the speaker vote, keeping you updated on that throughout the week, utilizing our resources, our government affairs team there in Washington, D.C. All put together, when you put that all together, it's because of your support for the ACLJ. We have a matching challenge right now where, again, you go to aclj.org. You can double the impact of your donation. That's aclj.org. And again, I just encourage folks to support our work at the American Center for Law and Justice, because it's a critical time to do so with all of the different, again, issues. Like, I'd ask you this at 1-800-684-3110 to give us a call. Do you think this is all talk from Joe Biden? Or do you think we'll actually start seeing the administration implement tough border security? Because the talk is only going to go so far if he's running for re-election and there's nothing changes at the border. So will he actually implement the policies that the left is threatening to file lawsuits on? 1-800-684-3110 if you have questions about that. Second question, do you have questions about how the McCarthy speaker vote came to an end and what concessions were made? You can give us a call about that as well. Rick and Rail is going to be joining us in the second half hour. 1-800-684-3110. Support the work of ACLJ at aclj.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
So we're going to talk more about Biden's border visit with Rick Rinnell in just a minute. When he joins the broadcast, we're going to get into issues involving, again, a little bit with McCarthy, too, with him about how that kind of came to a close. If you got questions about the final concessions and rules and votes that were ultimately agreed to and how the super PAC can act and not act, we'd be happy to take those. So you might be fully up to speed on that after a week or 7 days of coverage of that.
It's over now, and that's a good thing. Now they got to get the rules passed tonight, which could be a process.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't think as many people are going to be. We have the college football national championship tonight.
What team are you playing for?
I'm representing, as I am right now, the Georgia Bulldogs, it's interesting because Texas Christian, I mean, this is their first time. I have nothing against them other than I'd like to stomp them tonight. It was interesting because they took out a much bigger program, Michigan, to get to this game.
Everybody thought Michigan was going to be in it.
And Ohio State, Georgia was very close. So it was off a missed field goal at the end of the game.
Yeah, so Georgia needs to play better than they did against Ohio State.
Yeah, it's out in L.A., that's at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, it'll be a great national championship.
It'd be big for Georgia if they join the three club.
Yes.
National championship.
That would be big.
Back-to-back is a bit different too. I also saw the recruiting class is number two this year.
That tells you something,
of course, number one Alabama.
That's interesting. All right, we're taking your calls also at 800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. On the immigration issue, do you think that the president is going to do implementation? The policies they're putting forward, if these are actually the policies that get implemented, are serious. They're very similar to the previous administrations, quite frankly.
I have not seen which Governor Abbott's calling for, anything about the border wall.
Yes, and although the pictures of Joe Biden, of course, let's put them up on the screen, were at the border wall.
He wasn't tearing them down.
He was not tearing them down. They shouldn't. That's ridiculous.
You know what I'm saying, though? He wasn't there to, deconstruct them.
No.
So why not finish?
And their answer to that is...
The left.
Yeah, they got to placate AOC and company.
But, if he wants to win again as president, you got to kind of forget about AOC and company.
When do you think he's announcing?
I think next month. Next month is what we're hearing. So a lot of...
He's going to announce, right? You don't think he's not going to?
No. And so I think you're going to hear a very different Joe Biden over the next month. And you don't want to be fooled by it. That's why I said we got to see if they actually implement these policies and make sure it's not just words and photo ops. We're not going to be, fooled by that. You really start tracking if they're doing anything about it. But I think he's going to try and move way to the center. Because... That's how he wins. It's so he's not going to be as worried about the AOCs. He's not going to be as worried about the ACLU. In fact, the ACLU suing him, he might campaign on.
Yeah. But understand, if we think these policies are good and they're protecting the country, we don't hesitate to file a brief, even on behalf of the Biden administration, if it's protecting Americans.
Yeah.
But we got to make sure it's real laws, real regulations, and real implementation, because words are cheap.
Yeah, there's a Rumble comment came and says, is there a FOIA potential to find out exactly if they directed for cleanup before Biden's visit? I mean, we know they directed the cleanup.
No question.
I guess the question would be is, who directed? Would it be the White House? Would it have been White House to Homeland Security?
Hard to get things out of the White House because they're not subject to a FOIA.
So you'd have to go to Homeland Security.
It would be very interesting to know
what happened. Done in 24 hours. I mean, those pictures we show you are from Tuesday to, it was done a few days before he got there.
And he's being called out on it.
Yes, because it was done a few days before he got there, so it gave the media plenty of time to see. It wasn't like they did it the night before. They did it. It's Tuesday, Wednesday, right?
I mean,
or Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah, so a few days before. So it goes from a street of just chaos of people to a street of nothing.
Very interesting when you look at the picture. For those that are listening to us on radio, we have on the one side of the screen is what it was like on Wednesday, and it was a homeless encampment.
To walk by that is
dangerous. And Thursday, nothing. Totally same street, same spot on the street. Yeah. Exactly. And nothing. So it kind of tells you what the politics of what's going on here. All right, Rick Rinnell's joining us. We're taking your calls. You can talk to Rick as well at 800-684-3110. And as we mentioned in the last segment, we've got a case at the Supreme Court now. Looks like it's going to be decided on whether they're going to hear the case on Friday. It was originally last Friday, got pulled. That happens. It could get pulled again, too, but possibly Friday. And we would know if it's granted probably Friday afternoon. But they could pull it. And we just won a case for a student on the same kind of issues. So whether it's the Supreme Court of the United States, ACLJ's there, ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Support the work of the ACLJ. Back with more in a moment.
To Secula. We're joined by Rick Rinell, as our senior advisor for foreign policy, national security. He's been in politics for a long time as well, and in communications for a long time as well. I think that first question I have for Rick, because it really is about how this was communicated to the American people. It was Joe Biden's first visit to the border, Rick. Again, he walked by the wall that was built by President Trump and the administration you served in. A wall that he will not yet agree to finish being built, even though the money is already appropriated. The billions of dollars are already in the federal budget, ready to be spent. And he walked on clean streets that the media all was able to capture were cleaned up within, 24, 48 hours before his visit.
Look, I'm based in Southern California, and this is like a movie set. We should be jealous of what's happening down there at the border. Everybody knows this is phony. Everybody knows that he didn't want to go to the border, and he went through very quickly and they cleaned it up. And he'll now tell all of the newsrooms in D.C. that things are going well and that this is a complicated issue and that it's not his fault. And sadly, Jordan, that we will see all of the newsrooms in D.C. swallow that line and accept it. But everybody outside of Washington, D.C. knows that this border crisis was created by Joe Biden. This border crisis was created because the current Biden team didn't want to give Donald Trump credit. So they tried to change the policy. They tried to do something different. And it was a disaster. We see what's happened. And I'll finish with this. I think it's really important that Americans, every single person that's listening to us, understand that we are the most generous nation in the world when it comes to immigration. We allow almost 1 million people a year to become U.S. citizens. Unfortunately, we have about 100 million that want to come in, so we have to have rules.
You know, it's interesting you said that, Rick, because as I said earlier, Governor Abbott met with the president on the tarmac when he came in on Air Force One, and he gave a letter to the president that said, Mr. President, your visit to the southern border with Mexico today is $20 billion too late and 2 years too late. And your visit avoids the sites where mass illegal immigration occurs and sidesteps the thousands of angry Texas property owners whose lives have been destroyed by your border policies. Even the city you visit has been sanitized of the migrant camps which had overrun downtown El Paso because your administration wants to shield you from the chaos that Texans experience on a daily life. And then he listed five specific things. What's interesting to me, Rick, is the administration is now talking about putting in place various measures that read an awful lot like the measures you were doing when you were in the administration, in the previous administration.
You know, I was glad to see the Texas governor really be bold. And what Greg Abbott decided to do was to confront the situation and confront really the sham, the lies that were being told by all these newsrooms. And for Governor Abbott to push back against this narrative in a way that obviously was very respectful and was in person. And kudos to him for doing it. I think he's right. I think that the people of Texas have been experiencing this crisis. The people of Arizona have been experiencing this crisis. We have a wall in California. One of the reasons why Gavin Newsom and Nancy Pelosi, when she was speaker, didn't really want to move forward on the border crisis issue is because there is a wall in California all the way up to the very end. And so they see that, we've kind of stopped the inflow, at least over the border from in California, and it wasn't an emergency for them. But you're right, President Trump really had that border secured, and the media didn't like it. And so now they're trying to support Joe Biden and this, incredible faux story of the border being more complicated and not his fault.
Do you think there's any chance, Rick, that they actually implement these policies? I mean, he's going to announce a presidential campaign, it looks like, next month. They say he might want to move to the center. And in fact, he might want to be sued by the ACLU at this point if he's going to play that centrist role up again and try to fool the American people. That we'd actually see any of these policies, especially the ones that like Greg Abbott laid out, some that even the Biden administration has laid out, actually implemented, because we've said to ACLJ, if they're actually implemented and they get sued by the ACLU, we'd be happy to defend them if they're actually going to do this.
Look, I think that right now, if the border starts to get a little bit cleaned up, if more money goes, if we start to implement some of these policies, then thank God we got a Republican Congress, because it's the House that is doing this. Joe Biden isn't doing this on his own. He's a politician who literally needs to have a Republican House and Senate. Otherwise, he is going to go as far left as possible. I think it's an argument to change the Senate and make sure that the Senate is Republican, because now we're starting to see progress on some of these serious policies thanks to a Republican House.
So following up on the so we have a Republican House. We now have a Speaker of the House. Today we should have rules of the Congress put in place. One of the first issues, and you were the Director of National Intelligence, so you know one of the big issues is the 87,000 IRS agents that the administration wanted to hire. This Congress, Kevin McCarthy saying that's one of the first things we're doing. We're not going to provide the funding for that. Where people need to understand, or audience needs to understand, that appropriation control, funding of money for specific projects, is one of the best defensive moves that the conservatives in Congress have right now, because you still don't have the Senate, but at least you have the ability to say no on the funding.
I love the left pushing back on this story, because they say, no, it's not 87,000 IRS agents. It's 87,000 IRS staffers, which I'm not sure what the difference is.
Right.
But the reality is that we don't need to be having more staff at the IRS. We need to be able to get to a system that's more simpler. And everybody knows that. Only really wealthy people right now get to manipulate through hiring experts, manipulate so that they don't, they take advantage of every single rule, and they don't just, pay like the rest of us do. And I think that it's really important for the Republican Congress to now keep their word, not only on the IRS staffers, end that and put them at the border, but also on Dr. Fauci. Let's talk about Chris Wray. There is a long list of issues that have been ignored for the past 2 years that we need to get to work on.
I'd sure like to know, and I could speak to this because it personally impacted our family, what China's culpability was, which we know is going to be extensive, on the virus because the pandemic. Because I think it was almost like an act of war the way they did this. And I lost a brother to COVID. And the fact of the matter is that I still cannot believe that the Chinese government has gotten away with this. To me, it's mind-boggling, Rick, that 2 years in to this administration, China's held to account on nothing related to this.
Lives were lost. Billions of dollars were lost. Businesses were lost.
Education was destroyed for kids.
Our children. It's really, honestly, something that we can't let go. The secretive nature of the Communist Party of China caused this problem.
Yep.
And we need to be able to talk about it, certainly at the UN, certainly in the international community, but of course in America and through the U.S. government.
Rick, as always, we appreciate your commentary, your insight through last week with the speaker's battle, now with the border security and immigration. As always, Rick Rendell, who is, again, our senior advisor for foreign policy and national security, former acting director of national intelligence, and Ambassador Germany. Thanks, Rick.
You know, it's very interesting that you watch the other media right now. We just got the House situation confirmed with a speaker. That was a week-long event.
It was a week of media.
It's done. We'll talk about that. But then you have now the media is already saying, hey, look, in 2024, the Senate doesn't look so good for the Democrats.
That
builds up that false expectation for conservatives, though. That's what, look, folks, we got hoodwinked this last time.
It's a presidential year.
Of course, it's going to be a big turnout.
It's very, you don't really even, you got to look at the top of the ticket. That drives so much of the turnout. It doesn't, again, you still have to have good candidates. We saw in Georgia people who were voting for Kemp and didn't vote for Herschel Walker. So you don't want those situations again. But when you get presidential campaigns and the billions and billions spent there, it's a totally different election year. Midterm elections, which are becoming more and more expensive,
yes,
and feeling more and more like regular general elections, are still not general elections. Way more people vote. Way more money is spent. And you will have, ultimately, two figures, one likely Joe Biden, one likely Republican, or definitely a Republican, who are the leaders of their party.
yep.
fighting it out to become president of the United States. And everything else takes a secondary role to that, because you can usually see, you know, the coattails there. And the coattails are big.
So coming up on the next segment of the broadcast, so the January 6th committee wrapped up. They put all their information online to have it there for history. They wrapped up. They put the hundreds of records online, including interview transcripts, audio recordings, and text messages. Oh, by the way, buried in this massive number is 2,000 Social Security numbers. I'm not talking about the last four digits of your Social Security number. I'm talking about their entire Social Security number. Who were those people? I don't know. Three members of the United States Cabinet? Two governors? Agencies are saying, oh, yeah, that does put people's protection and privacy at risk. No kidding. That's what the January 6th committee can do. Their response has been, an unnamed staffer says it was an inadvertent error. This is the nonsense of what's going on in Washington. We're going to talk about that coming back from the break here. Support the work of the ACLJ at ACLJ.org. Back with more in a moment.
Secular. So covered a lot, some different topics. Last week was so dominated by speaker's race, if you will, and the votes. And ultimately it ended the way we thought it would end, which was Kevin McCarthy as speaker. And I still feel like, you know, if this rules vote goes the right way, if it doesn't, we can get into that tomorrow on the show. If it does, I think a lot of what happened last week will not be.
No, people forget.
You know, it's not going to be that. It's not like people say, oh, this is embarrassing and this and that. People will forget and move on.
Talking about embarrassing. Let me tell you something that's embarrassing. January 6th committee, the select committee on January 6th, publishes in their final week. They get all their information out. They posted the records online. They posted transcripts, audio recordings, text messages. And, ready for this? 2,000 Social Security numbers that were associated with visitors to the White House. They did not redact them in December of 2020, including at least three members of the former president's cabinet. Andy?
Yeah, this is an interesting thing. And the question that, of course, comes to my mind is whether or not this was just a negligent act, unintentional, or whether this was a determined and plotted out act of deliberation.
What's the significance of a Social Security number? Not just the last four digits, of the entire Social Security number.
I mean, it opens up your entire everything, your bank accounts, your personal life, your Social Security status, your investments, your property, everything. Everything is linked to your medical records, for example. Yep. When you go in for an operation, the first thing they want to know is, what is your Social Security number? So it is the identity, your personality. You are your Social Security number. It is your alter ego. And basically, it's now exposed to the entire world. And someone, at least, Governor Kristi Noem, is doing something about it.
But now, who were the ones that were actually hit with? I mean, there's 2,000 people, but who else was it?
So, what's interesting, I want to point out, too, these were all people who visited the White House.
Yes.
So, I mean, if you want to say, is it intentional or unintentional, these were only people that were going to visit President Trump or his staff.
So, of course, it was intentional.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was intentional. And Governor Noem, it was her husband, two daughters, her son, and her son-in-law, and the information was put on the log. The interesting question—
Ben Carson also.
Ben Carson, and there was another cabinet member, I think you mentioned.
Alex Azar.
Alex Azar.
Governor Abbott from Texas, and Governor McMaster from South Carolina.
Of course, that was not intentional on the part of for Governor Abbott, was it? No, of course not.
But, I mean, what's their explanation for this?
Oh, there is no explanation. I cannot say that it was, and no one can say that it was just negligence. Oh, we're sorry, we didn't do it. You don't just accidentally disclose Social Security numbers. That is not done. And Governor Noem's lawyers are going to get to the are intended to get to the bottom of it. Their letter goes to the White House Counsel, the Government Publishing Office, the National Archivist, and Representative Thompson of the January 6th Committee.
The chairman. Yeah.
We want to find out who of you dropped the ball, or did you do it intentionally?
That committee's gone now, though. The committee itself has no effective power.
No.
But they're lingering online, and that's where this becomes dangerous. But could you imagine if another administration had done this, what the reaction would be? I mean, I'm not even going to name names of other administrations, but just think about it for a moment, folks. What would CNN be covering right now? Okay? That's what you got to ask yourself. 2,000 Social Security, and like I said, not just the last four digits. Which
the opponents of the administration.
Of course.
I mean, not just random folks, but
And these are high-profile people. Like you said, I mean, Ben Carson, Governor Abbott, Governor McMaster,
Governor
Alex Azar.
Yeah.
These, I mean, this is high ranking people. Not
and their families.
By the way, and their families. It's not insignificant for other people too. I think it's
significant too that it's not just them, but their kids, their husbands, their wives.
Right. Identity theft is a huge criminal issue. It's a criminal enterprise.
Well, of course it is. Identity theft is something that, I mean, you can't turn on the television today without running into some entity, some company who says we can protect you against identity theft. It's a big thing. It's done. It's happened in my family in terms of identity theft and hacking into accounts. Everybody has experienced it or knows someone who has. Now the government is basically promoting it by saying, here are the social security numbers of 2,000 people, including all these high public officials.
So when you ask, how did these and by the way, these people that are involved in identity theft are like cartels. I mean, this isn't just like one-off guy in somewhere in Africa, on the continent of Africa. That's not the way it works. These are, well, they may be operating out of there, but they are organized efforts. So now you just gave 2,000 people, Jordan, information and say, here it is.
Yeah, to the dark web. I mean, it doesn't matter that now that's been cleaned up and off. It was on there long enough to where
they got it.
Oh, yeah,
actors who, they don't necessarily care that these are, but what they do know is that these are a lot of successful people who have lots of bank accounts and lots of ways to go at them and also to harass. So you've got two issues. You've got one, I bet in that 1900, a lot of business people, CEOs, company executives. So you got those who they would love to get access to their social security numbers, the bad actors. And then second, when you look at the politicians, not only is it about identity theft, but it's around harassment because of the personal information you can get.
This, the danger of all this is...
So the January 6th committee putting more people in danger than not.
Yeah, so here's what's interesting about this. That's the legacy now of the January 6th committee is, by the way, at the end of the game, we released 2,000 Social Security numbers of American citizens. And you wonder why people are like worried about their government or the FBI or these agencies. We've talked about this for months on this broadcast.
And Congress getting people's personal info.
Yeah, I mean, because what do they... You know, first of all, why do they have to release any of that? They want to release who went there. Okay, I mean...
That whole column should have been removed.
But they didn't redact... They redact some of them. They did not redact all of them.
Right.
Which tells you they knew they were in there.
Yep.
And then they didn't do it. This is not... You know, the Governor Noem has done what? What is she asking for?
Governor Noem wants to know, through her lawyers, exactly who it was. How did the breach of the privacy occur? Who was responsible? What steps have you taken to remedy the breach? What measures will be taken to protect Governor Noem and her family? I'm reading from the lawyer's letter. In light of the public dissemination of her private information and the heightened risk for identity theft, of course it is a heightened risk, and other future privacy violations. In other words, who did it? Why'd they do it? What are you doing about it?
This is the problem with unaccountable government. Now, new Congress is in. They're going to pass the rules hopefully today. You know what I'd like them to pass tomorrow? No 87,000 agents to the Internal Revenue
Absolutely.
Service. That should be job one here. Yeah. How do you see it going down? What's our team saying the government affairs?
You got to have a fight on appropriations. And you fight with the Senate, you fight with the White House. And at best, if you can't get that money to the border, at least you keep it out of the IRS's hands.
How do you think that's going to go? Our team's working on it?
Yeah, I think as long as the House doesn't acquiesce, again, that you can at least keep the money out of the IRS. You might not be able to get the Biden administration to redirect it to the border, which we would all like to see. But you could certainly, if Republicans remain strong and together, keep it in a situation where that money never goes to the IRS.
Yeah, so here's the thing that we're telling you. Whether it's the Supreme Court of the United States, a local city council, Supreme Court case on abortion, local city of Pueblo, Colorado hearing, okay? Now we're talking about an issue of border security. Our ACLJ team and ACLJ action teams are engaged in all these issues. And your support of the ACLJ makes that all happen. You supported us in 2022. Just want to encourage you to do that in 2023. Go to ACLJ.org and donate online. That's the easiest way to do it. ACLJ.org. If you appreciate this broadcast, appreciate the work we do, ACLJ.org. Also, make sure you're following us at Jordan Seculo, at Jay Seculo, at Logan Seculo, and at ACLJ. That's on Rumble, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Truth. Am I leaving anything out? Probably. But that gives you the
Instagram.
List. Instagram. And get our email alerts. Go to ACLJ.org for that as well. Great way to stay engaged.
That's right. So support the work of the ACLJ, ACLJ.org. We'll follow that rules committee vote. tonight to see if, you know, Congress can get, you know, fully back on track. But we have a sworn in House of Representatives.
When do you think they start movement on the not funding the agent, the IRS?
I think, again, we're just going to talk about that tomorrow with the Congresswoman. So I think
Right.
we get a good idea because these committees are just now in formation
Right.
After the rules passes. Go Dawgs.